Hello again, everyone, and welcome to today's show. If you're one of the 130 million people that are dealing with SIRS, Lyme disease, autoimmune disease, or other conditions that are impacted by mold on a daily basis, and you need to learn how to eliminate that exposure, then you're in the right place. My name is Brian Carr, and you're listening to Mold Finders Radio. Everyone, how are we doing? So today is episode 2 of our 4-part series. A few episodes ago out, we had episode 1 of this series of Brian's health journey with Equalife. And so the first episode, for those of you who didn't listen, you can go back and listen to it. It was with Erica Hull. She's VP of Health over at Equalife. And she basically ran through the plan of how we get started to assess me to figure out where I am. Part of that included tests that were going to be specific that I was going to do. So to recap, I did 3 different tests. I did a heavy metal and nutrient test, which I'm sure I'm saying it wrong, but that was one of the tests that I did. I did a candida and metabolic and vitamins test, and I did a mycotoxin test. So those are 3 that I did. I put some stories out where I had a patch of bald hair in the back of my head from where I cut my hair out. And since then I got a haircut and I'm looking great. And so that's where we started. In addition to that, I also went through and used Equalife's detox weekly, 7-day detox program. And I was kind of sharing that, as that was going on too. So today is step 2. I actually have the man, Dr. Stephen Cabral, on. And so I've got the top man to come on and help me talk about what's in my results, what it means, should I be concerned? If so, how much, this, that, or the other, and all that good stuff. And so with all of that, Dr. Cabral, this is number 2 with you and I on the show. So happy to have you back.
It's great to be here. Appreciate you having me back and, look forward to our partnership working with each other and helping people on both ends of the spectrum. I mean, you are the experts at what you do at finding the mold, remediating the mold, getting rid of it. And what we do on our end is we test the person, not just the home or the office or the dwelling, and then help them get rid of that if there is any as well. And so, it's great to be back. Appreciate you having me on.
Cool. So I've got 3 labs up in front of me on my computer results. I think I said the first lab wrong. So you can correct me on what it's called, but it was the hair test where I went bald in the back, and it was like a mineral and heavy metal test, right? Is that what that one is?
Yes. It's a minerals and metals test. Yes. It looks at heavy metals and the minerals in your body. So basically it's looking at all the positive minerals, the electrolytes like calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium. It's looking at copper and zinc for the immune system, phosphorus for your bones and muscle tissue, selenium and chromium, so blood sugar, thyroid, et cetera. And then it looks at lead and arsenic and cadmium and mercury and aluminum. And those are the ones that we don't want elevated, certainly in the body, because they can cause oxidative stress, neurological issues, brain-based issues like Alzheimer's in the future. So those are all part of the overall equation. And just a couple snips of hair. So we're going to have someone give you that little snip of hair in the back next time instead of maybe you, if you did it on your own.
Can I tell you how this went down? So I have short hair, right? So like in the instructions, like lift up your hair and cut behind it. But like you have hair like the length of me. And it comes with this little scale. And we kept doing, like, my wife is sitting back here with scissors. It was a disaster. And she we keep filling the scale. We're like, it's not enough of a scale. And she just, by the end of it, I look like, I don't know, like a leopard spots on the back of my head. And then I had my hair cut 3 or 4 days later. And the person that cuts my hair, she's like, I didn't tell her. I was just going to sit down and like get her reaction. She just, what the hell happened to you?
Surprise.
Yeah.
So, and I've given, I call it thousands of pretend haircuts in my practice in Boston. And what I always did for guys with short hair, like myself as well, around the sides, is you just start to go up higher where your hair is a little longer on the top. And we just use a little bit of that longer hair in the back, and that's it. You just take, and for women, it might be 2 to 3 snips that obviously they would never see missing. For guys, I'll do more like 6 to 8 and just make them smaller. And so you won't see them missing from there. But, we live and we learn. You'll do this again in maybe 6 months or so.
Put out a tutorial video on how to do this.
100%. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right. So I'm going to hand it over to you. Let's talk through. And guys, just everybody listening. So the point of this is to really understand like how these conversations go. So I'm a patient that's working with Dr. Cabral right now, right? Like that's what's happening. And so this is how these conversations go. So we haven't really talked about it beforehand. So we'll see how it goes.
No, this is, you know, you're just getting your lab results today. So what we do is we have PDFs of your lab results. It's going to be in your hopefully easy to read methodology of red is out of range, yellow or orange is starting to become elevated, low or high, and green is optimal. So, you know, people can really start to understand their results. That's the whole goal with at-home lab testing, with functional medicine testing, is giving control back to the wellness client or the patient. Like that's really it. And then it gives you a summary on the right-hand side. So without people having these results right in front of them right now, what we look at first are your calcium levels, your magnesium, your sodium, your potassium. And we don't look at these as, again, these are snips of hair. So basically, hair mineral analysis testing has been used now for many decades. NASA uses it. NIH uses it. They use it for heavy metal testing in pregnant women to make sure there's no elevated levels of mercury, et cetera. So drug testing for FBI, et cetera, has always used hair testing. And what hair does, it's a protein and it catches whatever is being excreted by the body. And so the greater level of excretion, the higher the number on the minerals and metals test, because all that happens is the lab gets a sample of your hair, they turn it to an ash, and then the ash, just like food, you then see what is the mineral content or metal content of that ash. And that's how you actually figure out all the different mineral levels in food as well. So you have a very normal level of calcium, a little bit lower on magnesium, elevated sodium and potassium. And although for us, the most common thing we see is elevated calcium and sometimes magnesium shows higher stress in the body. For you, the elevated sodium and potassium actually shows greater adrenal output. And you can look at it a few ways. Basically, you're just saying that the body is producing typically more of a hormone called aldosterone. Aldosterone is sodium sparing. It helps to raise blood pressure when the body's stressed, or there's like an acute output. And now the body's doing fine in terms of calcium and magnesium for the most part. We want to add a little bit more magnesium to your diet or through supplementation. And then also lifestyle-based exercises to lower the stress response. This could be breathwork exercises, it could be sauna, it could be going for a walk, it could be any of the things to kind of balance stress outside of the day. And also keep in mind, your hair is really short. That means we're looking at no more than a 30-day sample. For women or men with longer hair, if they give us an inch and a half sample, we're looking at about 90 days because the average person's hair grows about a half an inch or so per month. So for you, 30 days could be stress over the last 30 days for whatever, you know, was going on, work, life, et cetera. And that shows just a little higher stress. Does that make sense?
It does. I actually have a couple of questions already off of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So having higher sodium potassium is indicating just general higher stress levels. Is that what I'm kind of understanding?
Yes. For the electrolytes, we're not looking at, Brian's on a higher sodium diet. That's typically not it, or higher potassium diet. These are based on the central nervous system or autonomic nervous system. Apologies, my glucose sensor is going off right now. And low blood sugar, my sodium potassium spiky right now. So the interesting thing is that when the body's in the sympathetic nervous system, it actually excretes higher levels of calcium and sodium. It just means that it's drawing more calcium in to get you into more of the sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight, and same with sodium. And that increases blood pressure, vasoconstriction, gets us ready for basically fighting or fleeing, right? Running. Mm-hmm. Potassium is the blocker of the fight or flight, pushes you into more parasympathetic, and magnesium slows that fight or flight as well. So you always have what's called antagonists. So calcium has magnesium and sodium has potassium. Now your body is very well balanced. So when your sodium starts to get elevated, potassium is there to basically keep it at like a 1-to-1 so things don't get out of check. Now, some people we see, their bodies aren't necessarily as resilient or strong. So we'll see really elevated sodium and calcium and then low magnesium and potassium, which is not what we want to see.
Got it. So when you look at this, it's less about like I'm eating too much sodium or potassium. It's more about how my body is like stress response in the body as opposed to just general
Like, for these stress-based electrolytes, that's correct. As we start to move into the other parts of the test, we'll start to get into what levels intake-wise are a little higher or lower. But since your autonomic nervous system regulates a lot of these electrolytes, we need to look at it as total stress response. Now, we can manipulate these a bit. I'm not saying that we can't. If we increase magnesium in your diet through food and or supplementation, we'll actually be able to then balance out calcium, and magnesium will also calm the central nervous system. So we don't want to overdo magnesium. We don't want to make you too sleepy and tired, but we'll use it the latter half of the day. Maybe one capsule at lunch and then two at dinner, or maybe a little bit before bed. We use a full spectrum magnesium and a calming magnesium. Calming is the powder based. And a lot of people use that before bed because ideally, let's say you're working during the day, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. We'll just say like kind of that's the fight or flight based time. We don't want it the whole time, but you know, ups and downs. We need to turn that off at 7 p.m. and get you into good night's sleep and rest at night, even before bed, till 7 in the morning. Then we have a more balanced nervous system, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. So the fact like I do Element electrolyte powder.
Yes.
So obviously that's for those who don't know, not obviously, but it's sodium, potassium, magnesium are the three key things that are in the Element powders.
But it's a very high sodium. So sometimes we do see this. This is a good point. I appreciate you bringing that up. Element electrolyte, I have no issues with it. It's really meant for, though, someone who sweats a lot. And why that's important is that it is not a balanced sodium to potassium. And I'm not saying that in any negative way. If you sweat a lot, it replaces that sodium. But for someone, if they're not sweating like on a daily basis, you just need more potassium then. That's actually really important to note that. Whereas an electrolyte that I look for like an everyday person that's not sweating all the time, I'm not going to name any brands. It's just look for one that's a 2-to-4 ratio maximum of sodium to potassium. And so I look for like a 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 of sodium to potassium to replace that lost sodium. And that's assuming that you're not using like Redmond's Real Salt or Himalayan sea salt or Celtic sea salt during the day. Because if you're taking 1,000 milligrams of sodium, you know, in a, let's say an electrolyte packet from Element, and then you're adding more sea salt to the day, are you just overdoing the salt if you're not sweating a lot? It's something that people should ask themselves.
Interesting. So you feel like that could be something that might be a part of this? Cause like I sauna 4 days a week. So I'm sweating 4 days a week. I work out 4 to 5 days a week, but my workouts are more like strength based, not cardio. So I'm not doing a whole lot of sweat in like the weightlifting part, like a little bit, but then I hit the sauna right afterwards and then I'll sweat kind of after that. So let's kind of tie the knot on that in terms of kind of what my normal day looks like.
Well, I would say, and people know too, like if you sweat and you can actually taste the salt, you're someone that excretes more salt than a lot of other people. If you start to get a little lightheaded, especially at the end of the sauna or after a cardio session where you're sweating a lot, then you absolutely may need that sodium to be replaced at that higher level. But look at it as an aggregate through the whole day. You know, how much sodium are you taking in? And I'm not against sodium by any stretch of the imagination. I just like to make things a little bit more bio-individualized per person. And so maybe it's you use that before the sauna days, but not on the off days, or maybe use a different electrolyte, or you just use a pinch of sea salt and a whole lime or lemon, which is kind of adding a lot more potassium in there as well.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Awesome. All right. That's all I had on that piece. So I'll let you keep driving.
You can get as in depth as you want. What we do for everyone in our practice, we always leave you with a personalized plan. So, but these conversations, since oftentimes we'll do a little intake, helps us to bio-individualize it based on the person. And I think that's, you know, really important. And then there's also
that's
self-experimentation.
Really cool. Yeah,
you know,
that's
you might feel
cool.
better with a half a packet of Element. And then some days you try a full packet. Like you'll be able to work with yourself now that you know this and say, okay, how do I feel with this? Maybe I take my blood pressure. Maybe I see how it's affecting me. And then you really begin to take control of your overall health.
Cool. Yeah, I'll share that plan out so people can see what this conversation turned into on the back end, because I think it's pretty cool. So
perfect.
All right. So we're in the next phase.
So then
here,
as we move to your nutrient minerals, we don't. So the only one that we want to make sure is that iron is not elevated. So iron should always be low on a minerals and metals test, a HEAR test. And the reason is that iron should not be high in either men or women to the point where it's being excreted. Iron stays in the blood. So it's a homeostatic fluid that stays in that blood. Best test for that is a TIBC and a transferritin iron saturation rate. You have that done basically when you run your blood work. So that's where you want to look at that. But if it's elevated, which sometimes it is in men, which could be a sign of what's called hemochromatosis, then we, of course, alert you. We let you know that. But it's very rare. Luckily, your iron levels are great. Your copper levels are lower than we would like them. I'm going to go over that in a moment. Manganese is a little bit lower. That can lead to lower energy, lower mitochondrial output. Low copper can lead to grain of the hair. It can lead to thinner hair, skin, nails. It can lead to lower mitochondrial output, lower thyroid output. Your zinc is optimal. Your chromium's a little bit low. Your selenium is pretty great. It's almost in that optimal range, which we don't often see it there as much, especially if you're not supplementing or eating things like Brazil nuts, which are higher in selenium. And your phosphorus looks good. So when I talked previously, because we want to work on that copper to a greater degree, if you're supplementing with zinc, we see this a lot. We started to see it a lot during the pandemic. People were supplementing with just zinc. And I talked about earlier, everything has an antagonist. So if you increase zinc, it pushes down copper. If you increase copper, it'll push down zinc. And so the nice thing is we know how to fix this. So we add a little bit of copper and then we either draw back on your zinc or we just use a product called Balanced Zinc, which contains 1 milligram of copper for every 15 milligrams of zinc. Because even though you want them in balance, you have to keep in mind in nature, you get a much smaller amount of copper than you do zinc. So again, we're huge advocates of zinc for your hair, your skin, your immune system, your nails, your muscle tissue growth for exercise or just repair. And so that's an important one. So we would have you use a product that has a little bit of copper, not eliminating your zinc, but adding a little bit more copper, which I think you'll see a difference then in that mitochondrial output, you know, again, overall focus, hair, skin, nails, all that.
Cool. Well, so far, I don't really have a lot of gray hair. So put this in the,
yes. The mix. No, you're doing well.
The same head of hair that I got. There you go.
That looks good. That looks good. And in kids, it's important. We look at copper because there can be actually elevated copper. There can be what's called a copper toxicity. And copper toxicity can lead to executive functioning disorder, emotional mood-based outbursts. It can lead to difficulty focusing. So it's important for kids that we look at that. And it's something that we see quite a bit in our practice too.
It's actually interesting. How many kids do you have that go through these tests? Like how many kids are getting tested?
Quite a few, especially for the three that you ran, because we work with a lot of children, maybe on the autism spectrum based disorder, or we're looking at environmental allergies, sensitivities, you know, what could it be? We're looking at gut health issues. So what you ran is called a starter kit for the minerals and metals test and the candida metabolic and vitamins test. And since it's so easy to take a couple snips of hair from a child 3 years and up, and then a urine sample, we do run a lot of those labs.
Got it. Okay. Yeah,
it's much easier than drawing blood. Nothing obviously wrong with drawing blood, but blood only shows you disease-based diagnosis and what we're looking for, the underlying root cause issues. So for example, on the next and last part of your minerals and metals test, we look at lead, we look at mercury, cadmium, arsenic, and aluminum. And these are all in the environment. And so you actually had elevated levels of mercury, and then you had mildly elevated levels of aluminum. I'll talk about aluminum first. So aluminum we see, unfortunately, on about 70% or more of first-time minerals and metals test wellness clients. And the reason is, it is in everything from tap water, ice cubes out at a restaurant, the water that you're washing your veggies and produce with. It's in antiperspirants, aluminum pans, the aluminum spatulas, aluminum foil. It's in most baking powders. So it's in a lot. And that is why it's showing up more and more in people's, unfortunately, blood and then in their hair. And so we're able to help get rid of it, which is great. But we also then want to work on not just a heavy metal detox, but actually on the lifestyle part of it. So like, how might you be exposed to aluminum? And oftentimes, yeah, it's the aluminum perspirant, other items like that, tap water. So we're doing that. But often We look at it as the pans that you're cooking with every day. As they get older, you just scrape them with a metal spatula. Just these micro particles of aluminum can get in there. And over time, they begin to accumulate. So instead of having somebody replace every pan they own, we say, what's the one that you cook with the most often? You know, everybody has like a saucepan that they typically, or a frying pan, whatever it is. All right, let's start there. Let's use parchment paper, non-bleached parchment paper, instead of aluminum foil. And then let's use a water filter. Already, we've cut out about 80% of where your exposure would be.
Cool.
So simple changes like that. And then mercury, I'm interested as to how the exposure may have taken place for mercury. So there's 2 to 3 main ways. The first way is through larger fish. It's tuna, it's swordfish, any of the large fish. The second way is mercury amalgams in the malt. So those silver fillings, those contain mercury. And after you've had them sometimes for 10, 20 years or more, they can start to upturn a little bit in the edges. And every time you chew, you can get a little bit of mercury particles into the body and the blood. And the last way is just accumulated shots over the years, even food sensitivity shots or environmental-based allergy shots can have aluminum or mercury in them. A lot of them have been taken out now, but those could have accumulated in the body. And if you've never done anything to get rid of it, now you're doing a lot of sauna now, which is fantastic. It may have accumulated over time. So this can be not recent exposure, because we don't have a previous lab test for you. This right. could be many decades. It could be a decade plus ago of exposure.
Okay. So a couple of thoughts on those things. You said fish. You said, what was the second thing? The teeth stuff. So let me talk about the teeth stuff. So I have had, I have 3 implants. So it's not like amalgam fillings, which is what you said, but I actually have like titanium implants. So I know that's not necessarily mercury. I don't know if there's a connection there, if it truly is just the filling piece. So that was kind of my first question on that.
Yeah, usually they're using titanium or now sometimes zirconium, which is fairly hypoallergenic. So most likely not from that. Most likely. I can't say for sure, but yeah, most likely not.
Cool. And then the fish thing, I mean, I've definitely gone through my spurts of eating sushi and stuff like that. So I imagine that's where a lot of people sort of get this. So what are kind of the other main ones? Just so people can...
Tuna, swordfish, bluefish, marlin, mahi, larger Chilean sea bass, any of the larger fish that eat other fish. So the ones that I can just give people a tip that are mercury free are the sardines, the mackerel, the anchovies, the wild trout, and wild salmon. Now, all of them are small, basically, except for the wild salmon, but the wild salmon, it does not eat other fish, and that's why it doesn't accumulate the mercury over time.
Got it. All right, yeah. So for me personally, it's a lot. We Chilean sea bass, whenever we go out, usually that's kind of like the seafood that we'll get. And then, you know, sushi once every couple of weeks or something. I try to stay off of like raw stuff on my sushi as of late, because I went through a whole parasite thing like a year ago. And I was like, you know, I'd really love to not have to do this again. So I try to hang a little bit, but it does happen every now and then. So yeah, so those are maybe the couple of things there.
Yeah, so I would look at that. The nice thing is this. This is what I really recommend for people. Brian, this is your first time running these labs, but now for the rest of your life, you'll always have like your baseline at, you know, whatever age you are now. And if you run them once a year, then you'll know, oh, okay, the exposure happened over the last 6 months or the last year from the last time that you tested it. And that's a really nice peace of mind, knowing that you're always going to be able to catch things quickly. And so what we're going to do is what's called a heavy metal detox. It's different than a functional medicine detox. Functional medicine detox opens up the liver pathways, secondarily the kidney pathways, and enables you to eliminate all toxins from your blood at a much faster rate. So that's all. It's helping your liver, your kidneys do a better job in what they already know how to do. Now, a heavy metal detox is different. It contains specifically a antimicrobial product, or an anti-metal-based product that has herbs. So the herbs are natural chelators. So we don't do anything intensive, anything harsh on the body. Things like Crexyl, chlorella, kelp, et cetera, that helps to lock onto them and pull them out. And as they're being pulled out, we're using 2 other things. One's a biofilm disruptor. Okay, so that's really important that we're able to help if there are metals in the biofilm of the intestine. So a biofilm is basically a fibrin or gel-like structure that can be created in the intestines that can be protecting bacteria or parasites or even yeast. So we help to break that down with natural enzymes. And the last part is a binder. And the binder not only is a gentle lower histamine binder, because a lot of people with mold have histamine issues, which we, you know, have been working with many people in our practice that way. So it's formulated that way. But it also contains silica from bamboo shoot that helps as a heavy metal chelator and detoxifier as well. So that's what we use. It's 8 weeks. It's very simple. And then it helps to pull those metals out of the body. Now, you have to let the hair grow back, but you could test that again in 6 months if you wanted to make sure those levels are down.
Cool.
Yeah. And by the way, eating tuna once a month, maybe twice a month, once your levels are down, it's not an issue at all. It's not that you need to completely eliminate those fish. It's just some people, like I used to do in college, eat a can of tuna every single day, right? To get my protein in and on that. So that is not a wise thing to do. And I just had to be told it. I'm like, oh, okay. I see my numbers. That's not good. And so I stopped doing that.
Hey, real quick on that canned thing, because it actually, so we do have canned tuna. I don't eat it very often, but we have it. But then also like canned, like anything canned, let's just say anything canned. Are we talking that's an aluminum issue or is that a different metal? Like if we're eating food out of a can like that?
Yeah, it can definitely be an aluminum issue. That's for sure. As well as, which this doesn't look at, there's another environmental toxicity test for that. But there can be plastics, PCBs, and other issues in those cans, because almost all cans are lined with a plastic film of some type. And that's so that the aluminum doesn't corrode at a lower pH. So believe it or not, they have bisphenol A and other essentially plastics in them. Yeah.
Did not know that. So that's good to know. Okay. This all seems,
all right.
seems not too bad.
Yeah. The glass jars whenever possible. And it's not about being perfect. Like that's the thing. None of us can be perfect. We have canned food in our house as well. So that you don't, it's just like, okay, does this also come in a glass jar? If we can, okay, let's get the glass jar. When instead of using aluminum foil, which we used to do, you know, back in the day, we use parchment paper. And instead of a metal spatula, we're using like a bamboo spatula. So it's these small little switches you can do over time that make a big difference. Then of course, always filtering your tap water, even if your city says everything's fine. Just be careful on that one. Okay, so a little summary. We would be working specifically with you on that sodium potassium balance, maybe through electrolytes, maybe just through stress, lifestyle, calming the sympathetic nervous system, adding a little bit more magnesium to your diet or through supplementation. Because again, in that electrolyte packet, it's a very small amount of magnesium. We're talking about for you more like 300 milligrams or so per day. And then copper, we don't need a lot more copper. We're going to be using daily nutritional support or the daily activated multi, plus a specialty product called a balanced zinc, which includes zinc and copper, not just copper alone. So then you'll get 2 milligrams. Again, it's not a lot, but you'll get 2 milligrams a day of copper because you don't need a lot. You just need enough to get your body back into balance.
Cool.
And then a heavy metal detox when you're ready. That just gets added on to whatever you do in your daily life. It's not complicated. It's literally 3 nutritional supplements and that's it, instead of doing a chelation-based therapy, which can remove healthy minerals as well.
Got it. And yeah, I'm actually glad that you wrote that down, because sometimes we hear detox and it sounds like it's this big thing that has to happen. But really from what you're saying, it's like we're just adding a couple targeted, you know, supplementation that's going to help achieve a specific goal, right? And so that's what it is.
Exactly,
so
right.
A lot of sense.
Cool. The same herbs, like they've used herbs for thousands of years for parasites, same ones, like different ones, of course, but herbs, the same type of mentality for metals, than an enzyme and a binder. That's essentially, that's what you're doing. More natural way to do it, much gentler. And yes, you're right. I think a lot of people confuse like an intestinal cleanse with a detox, and they're very different. So we're not talking about having to run to the bathroom or anything like that, which is a concern. I mean, people think about that when they're doing a detox for sure.
Very concerning if you're on a podcast and you got to run to the bathroom.
That's right.
One more quick question, just tied into like metals. So my understanding is that parasites often feed on heavy metals. I don't know if this is totally true or not, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when you do like a heavy metal detox, let's say specifically here, is there any like secondary impact on parasites, and will that maybe, you know, incur some sort of Hirsch reaction or something because they're not getting what they want? Like, is there any relationship there?
It's a good question. So how we use all of our protocols, it always goes parasite protocol first, which is called a parasupport protocol. Then it goes to a gut health protocol. If there's anything going on with the gut, we use something called the CBO protocol. And then we would then do the mold protocol, or we would do the heavy metal detox, whatever the person needs next. So you basically work from most egregious to least. And that enables the body to not have this big Herxheimer-based reaction. And you might say, well, why would the mold be at the end? Because mold is something serious. Correct. I totally agree. But as you're working on the parasites and the CBO, like the gut, you're actually working on the mold at the same time. Because one of the most invasive issues with mold is mold's ability to start to shut down the immune system. And so 80% of the immune system actually lives in and around the gut. We need to fix the gut and the immune system, and then the immune system will actually start to attack the mold itself in the body. So that's how we work those.
So we did the starter kit here. Yeah. Does it make sense to be adding the other pieces beforehand? Or like, if we're talking about you would detox in that order, should we be testing in that order? It's just good to kind of get your thoughts on that, because I know we started here. And also, I guess, to understand, like, why is this the starter kit? Like, why is it set up that way with you guys?
Yeah. So the thing, we're always going to call it the starter kit, or we're actually going to be renaming it in the future as well, because it's where you start your overall health journey for children and adults. However, it's something you ideally want to run every 6 to 12 months, because it looks at, it's a picture of the underlying root causes that lead to the blood work being off and then lead to a disease diagnosis. So we just did your minerals and metals test. Now we're going to go over your candida metabolic and vitamins test. A lot of words, but basically what it's looking at is gut health. It's also secondarily looking at mold. And then it's beginning to look at your mitochondrial function for energy. And it's looking at all of your vitamin levels. So there's so much that it looks at. That's why if you do the two together, we call them the starter kit, they're a combination. You get all of your mineral levels, all your vitamin levels. You get your gut health plus heavy metals. So it's just a great place to start.
Got it. So you're getting coverage in the other tests, even though it's not called, quote, gut test. I gotcha. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. So this is, we call it candida because it's part of the gut. There's many different ways to test your gut. There's a stool test. There's a food sensitivity test. Although we offer those, we don't make them part of the starter kit. And the reason is that if we have, people always say, because we have the big five kind of tests everything. But they said, well, if I can only do two, because I've run a practice for a long time, what would those two be? And it would be these two. They're the easiest to test. You don't have to take a stool sample for 3 days. And so it's an easy one to run. And so as we're looking at yours, it's a few pages long. I'll go over kind of the highlights. The first page looks at yeast and fungal markers, healthy bacteria, but it can be overgrown, as well as Clostridia difficile that we don't want to see overgrown. And so the first few, numbers 1 through 9, there are 5 actual markers for a mold substance as well, Aspergillus, that we look at. And that is, although it's not testing specifically for mycotoxins, which we'll talk about towards the end, it is giving you an indicator. It is possible, there's potential crossover that these may actually be coming from a mold in the body or a mycotoxin in the body. So when I look at yours, all of them look overall really good. There's one that's right on the borderline, and that's arabinose. So if someone has a little higher level of, let's say, yeast, meaning like high optimal, they may have this number a little elevated. And so yours is elevated borderline, not enough for me to do anything specifically, because you don't want to, and again, we don't diagnose, treat, or give any medical-based advice, but I'm going to use the word treat in air quotes. We don't treat something just because there's a minor partial thing in the body, because you're not looking to change the gut microbiome. You're not looking to change anything unless there is actually something to work on. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. So the next we look at what are bacterial markers, but for the most part, beneficial. And when we look at your markers, we see one that's elevated called heparic acid, one that's mildly elevated, and that's just something called hydroxybenzoic acid, and that's coming from the intestines. And another one that's just borderline is the beneficial bacteria. So the interesting thing is we've run tens of thousands of these labs. Just this one specifically. And I can tell you that number 10 heparic acid that's elevated is sometimes elevated. in not necessarily a negative manner from those people that are drinking greens drinks, that are using collagen-based products, those are the main ones, or a lot of blueberries and berries in their smoothies. We've been able to correlate this. We've spoken with the lab, and they can actually show that. So just wondering if those are things that you take a lot in, and if so, that might explain that result.
So you said blueberries and berries. So
yeah, blueberries, berries, and then concentrated greens powders. Like we use the Daily Fruit Vegetable Blend. I don't know if you're using that or using a different greens. It can sometimes be elevated because of that.
Got it. Okay. So I don't do shakes really super often, but I do eat a lot of blueberries and strawberries and just general diet on that front. And as far as collagen goes specifically, there was a period in time, I've kind of stopped probably in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months or so, but I was putting collagen in my coffee every morning for, you know, a year or two probably. So that might be part of that. I don't do any greens powders really right now, but I do eat a lot of berries. So that's kind of the context on number 10.
Okay. No, and it may just be elevated bacteria, but I do like to ask because sometimes we see that and anything. So the nice thing is this is a urine sample. It's really just what's going on in the body over the last 24 to 48 hours. So I would say that, yes, possibly from the berries, but we want to take it all in context. So that's why I ask, of course. But then when we go down below, we see a little bit of a marker called Clostridia. And it's a form of bacteria that we don't want to see elevated in the gut. So what
Which
we're going to do...
that, Dr. Kral?
It's number 16 and 17. 16. So we've got a byproduct of the Clostridia bacteria, HPA, and then we have 4-Cresol, and that is a form of the main bacteria, which is Clostridium difficile, so C. difficile.
Okay.
So this is an overgrowth in the gut that can move through the gut wall. It can be filtered, of course, by the kidneys, and it can come out through the urine. If we see an elevated level, although your levels aren't very high, like on the lab test, anything, we want it less than 102, yours is 110. So not greatly elevated, but elevated, right? And then the other one for Cresol is, or Cresol, is above a 39, and yours is a 49. Uh-huh. So we're not talking about 150 or greatly elevated, but elevated enough that we would want to knock this down a bit, meaning like lower those levels. Because it's not that your body's supposed to be devoid of it. It's just not supposed to be overgrown. And so what we would use is what we call a modified version of our CBO protocol. And it's for those people that don't have very highly elevated levels. We do a 12-week protocol called the CBO protocol, but instead we have a 1-month modified protocol to lower those levels. And that's exactly what we're going to do for you.
Got it.
All right.
So that makes sense. Follow-up question on when we're talking about bacterial markers and that hip uric one that was elevated. Yes. So the range here was 241 was sort of the high end of the range, and then I was at 660. So Is that like an excessive high level? Like, because I know sometimes it depends on the thing, like what you normally see.
Yes, that would. So if you're looking at anything 2x and above, definitely yes, it's a high level. So yours is closer to 3x. For what we would even want is like our normal value there. And so for me, if let's say that you only had that level elevated and you didn't have any of the Clostridium difficile elevated, I'd say, okay, we're going to maybe attribute this then to the berries and to other things. But since you had two other markers that should not be elevated, I say, regardless if that's the berries or not, we're going to take care of that because we're going to be getting rid of that Clostridia overgrowth. Does that make sense?
Got it. Yeah, and just for some historical context on this, I did the GI map a few years ago, which is a stool sample that will show, I don't know if it's showing this stuff, but it shows bacterial overgrowth. I actually did have in that H. pylori overgrowth. I think I had a couple other things, but I know H. pylori is, you know, a pretty big red flag when that gets brought up. So I don't know if that had context to this at all or anything, but wanted to throw that out there.
It certainly shows then a history of gut-based imbalances because H. pylori is a bacteria that actually affects stomach acid digestion, can lead to acid reflux, can lead to all sorts of issues with the gut. So as long as that was taken care of, that's obviously a great thing. What we're looking at now is more downstream in the intestines where H. pylori typically lives more in the stomach. It can be in other parts, but typically in the stomach is where. Now, you find it on a stool test because it has to come out of the body, which is great. You tested for it, but hopefully that's been eliminated.
So I did nothing to eliminate it. So I'm pretty sure it's not been eliminated.
Okay.
Just good to quickly, know. I guess, like what's, how do you attack an H. pylori overgrowth? Because I know a lot of people have it. And like, whenever I bring it up to somebody, they're like, that's the one that you don't want. Like, that's a pretty big problematic one. And it's hard to address from what people have told me. So just love to get your thoughts on that.
So again, I can't give any medical advice. And we're talking now about a medical-based disease of the body. But I can tell you what I do and what many of the wellness clients in our practice choose to do. So having known that now, we would do the CBO protocol because we want to make sure that we get that and anything else. And we add a product called mastic gum. And we use 2 to 3 grams of mastic gum per day for 8 weeks. So I've had H. pylori twice when I was in my 20s, really just learning about all these health-based things. And my daughter had it, unfortunately. She got it when she was only about 4 years old from food poisoning at a restaurant. And unfortunately, she did get it. I saw the symptoms, bloated belly, things like that as a child, especially upon waking. And so did a stool test with her. Turns out she had H. pylori. And good news is we knew how to fix it. We did mastic gum. We did that for 8 weeks and she got rid of it, which was great.
That's cool. So with the CBO protocol you mentioned earlier, a modified version that was a month, would you switch to this 12-week version now knowing what I just told you, or would you keep it there and then just add the mastic gum piece?
Well, we allow the wellness client like yourself to say, okay, what do I want to do? Do I want to do a stronger 4-week protocol, or would I rather do a gentler build-up 12-week protocol where I'm using 3 products per day for 12 weeks versus 3 products per day for 4 weeks? And the stronger ones are basically for the first 4 weeks. We just dive right into it. Plus you would add the mastic gum onto that. And so it's not, let's make a deal, but I always like joke around with my, you know, clients, you know, what do you think will fit you? Because ultimately at the end of the day, I need to make sure that you complete it, that you're consistent with it, and that we keep in touch. And so after 4 weeks, 5 weeks, if you're just don't feel like a marked improvement in digestion or whatever it might be, because many people come to us, they have bloating, they have gas, they have constipation or diarrhea, we want to see a marked improvement in that. And mm-hmm. so then if the first 4 weeks didn't get it, we can always add the full 12 weeks CBO protocol.
So am I hearing you right when you say like a stronger version in a tighter time frame? Is that what this 1 week is? So there's basically like different concentrations, if you will, on the strength of the pills that would, or the supplements that would be happening. Is that the difference between the 4 and the 12?
Yes, but also the level, meaning that if you had elevated yeast markers, elevated bacterial markers, and you had the elevated Clostridium markers, you would be using a longer protocol because 4 weeks most likely wouldn't be enough to turn everything around. So it's basically a yes on both. Yes, it is stronger only for 3 to 4 weeks, but even stronger does not necessarily mean better when you have a lot of overgrowth. You just need more time. And usually a gentler approach is better, where it's not as strong month one, get stronger month two, and then strongest month three. But by the time you get to month three, you've pretty much eliminated everything. So you don't feel any die-off. You don't feel any of the negative effects.
Got it. So what you're seeing in this is that I have some overgrowth, but not like a whole lot. And so the idea is then to say, let's do maybe the stronger version of it in a tighter time frame. Is that what I'm
And doing? Then add the mastic gum for 8 weeks. That's correct. Yes, right. Exactly.
Okay.
That's what I'd recommend to you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Okay. So then page 2, we're looking at oxalates. We're looking at the mitochondrial function. Mitochondria are basically the engines inside of each of your cells that give you energy, produce ATP for exercise, but also just things like walking up the stairs. Like if you didn't produce ATP, you'd be exhausted by the time you got to a top of the flight of stairs. And then we look at the neurotransmitter metabolites that also help with mood. And so I want to go over the mitochondria first. So your oxalates look good. Your mitochondria look great. They really do. Yes, there's one marker that's a little low called aconitic acid. But you look at when you look at the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle, which is basically how your mitochondria produce energy, it's not one marker. basically they move in a clockwise circle, we'll say, using B vitamins like niacin, B3. And they're using all of these different enzymes, amino acids, and proteins in order to produce energy. And so if when we're looking at them, they are all within range with yours are, one that we caught at that low time, it's only because it was already transferred then to another. However, if we see three or four markers low or high, we can see low mitochondrial output, low energy output typically, or excessive based on high levels of stress. Make sense?
Cool. That does make sense. And this, hey, one of these where you're like, hey, this looks great.
This looks great. Well, it is my job to nitpick as well, I will say.
Of course.
You know, I look at not necessarily all the gold stars, but okay, what do we need to work on? So the next part, I think you have very good levels of dopamine and serotonin, but lower levels. So dopamine is basically the rewards neurotransmitter. It gives us drive. It gives us energy. Serotonin is the happy, feel-good neurotransmitter. So your drive and your, you know, the leadership, the go, 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 that neurotransmitter is your highest out of all of them. And your serotonin one is a little lower. It's still right on that, like that right on that edge of being good. And that's the happiness, that's the feel good, that's the serotonin, the antidepressant one. And then norepinephrine, though, that's basically the gas for the car. Like that is the get up and go, not the I want the reward or I want to achieve. That's what dopamine is. Norepinephrine is the actual energy. That is a neurotransmitter, or we'll call it a stress-based hormone that comes from that sympathetic nervous system. And again, it's a little on the lower side. And if I were looking, because I like to use your minerals and metals tests as well, I would say we're actually seeing a little bit of a, over time, again, this happens over years, the body is becoming a little worn down. Not a lot, but a little worn down based on energy output over the years versus recovery and rejuvenation. So with you, these markers are not out of range, but what I would say is I would be working on making sure that your workouts and your sauna and all your work and your go, go, go are also balanced by recovery, rejuvenation before you get into your 50s and 60s and beyond, so that we're not trying to play catch up. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So that's what the recovery is, 34 norepinephrine and epinephrine. Is that what you're saying? That's kind of the recovery piece?
It's a sign that your body's no longer putting out the same output as it once did, as easily as it once did in terms of your stress hormones.
Okay.
So most likely your body is becoming, again, I'm nitpicking here because they're all within range, but not optimal. And so what I would say is that there's more energy going out than energy coming in. And over time, because this doesn't just happen overnight, it's starting to wear the body down. Now, having said that, I do like to use all of the labs, including the minerals and metals test that we did, to say to you that this is a snapshot in time. I don't want to over-exaggerate anything. I always listen to the person's story. And if it matches up, great. We begin to work on the lifestyle and those types of things. If it was just a last 30 days, yeah, I was training harder, wasn't getting as much sleep, there was a little bit more stress. All right, this was a moment in time, right? But let's still be aware of that. And so we don't have more of those months on top of months. That's how the body truly gets worn down and exhausted.
So I was going to ask this follow-up, and you might have just addressed it there. So, and it was, how do you address the energy coming in portion of it, right? So like, what are the actions that you take in order to address that?
So the number one thing is getting, so if you're someone that outputs a lot of energy through mental or physical, you want to make sure that you're in bed for 8 to 9 hours, sleeping for somewhere between 7 to 9 hours, and you want to get 90 minutes of deep sleep. So deep sleep is rejuvenating for the body, and REM sleep, where you want to be 2 hours or more, is rejuvenating for the brain. It's oversimplified, but that's basically how it works. So when you're using a Whoop strap or a ring, whatever you're using, look there. I see it on your wrist right there. You want to make sure that you're getting at least 75 minutes, ideally 90 minutes of deep, and that you're averaging 2 hours or more of REM. So that's going to be great recovery. The next thing is anything that's, we call like non-sleep deep rest. Could be PMF, could be sauna, but not overdoing it, not letting the heart rate get too high. It can be Epsom salt baths. It can be massage, foam rolling, acupuncture, any of the things that bring energy into the body rather than the output, which is the mental and physical.
So I almost wonder, because you're actually saying a lot of things that I do. And so now I'm kind of wondering, like, if I'm doing a lot of these things and we're still seeing this kind of at this lower place. So for some context, my deep and REM sleep are always great. Like, they make up 40 to 50% of my sleep cycle throughout the course of every night. So the numbers that you were saying, I'm typically higher than that in terms of the rate, you know, just the numbers of what it is. Now, my total sleep is an issue because I got, you know, kids that wake up at 6:30 and I have to do my workout in the morning and I have to work on. So like, my total sleep and my sleep debt is probably my biggest challenge there and how that works. But PEMF mat I use nightly before I go to bed. And sometimes during the day while I'm sitting, sauna, like I said, 4 days a week, you know, some different things like that. So, I mean, it feels like it really is just a sleep component, almost just like the time of sleep from kind of everything that I'm hearing. Well,
I work with a lot of, you know, high performance, a lot of CEOs, a lot of executives. Think about it as how many hours you're on, not just sleep, versus how many hours you're off. So, and parents as well. Think about you're balancing a job, your exercise, your kids, family. And so if I'm just going to make this up. Let's say you're sleeping from midnight to 6 a.m. All right. So that's 6 hours out of 24. So for what is it? 18 hours. So for 18 hours, you're on and 6 hours, you're off.
Mm-hmm.
And so start to think of it that way is not just, I was talking about a little bit earlier. You know, I try to work with people in a reasonable fashion, myself included. Although I wake up well before 7 a.m., my on time is basically 7, maybe 7:30, once I start helping the kids get ready and all that, till about, let's say, 7 in the morning till 7 at night. So 12 hours of on. Now, I try to take some off time during that time, taking a walk, those types of things, get in my own workout, which has a relaxation effect, not during it, but after it. And then trying to turn things down after 7 p.m., really around 5:36 is when we have dinner, so at that time. So the goal is just turning down the idle, the RPMs right in the car for more hours per day. That's how I would look at it for you.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, my day mirrors yours a lot. I'd say I go to bed on average at 9:30. I wake up at 5. But when I wake up, it's straight to gym because that's when I can do my time. So I'm up at 5 and I'm working out at 5:15 basically. And then sauna afterwards, and then kids wake up and like all that. So my on starts like right when I wake up, as opposed to kind of easing into a day.
I know what you're saying, and everything is a compromise. I get it.
Yeah.
But your sleep time is fantastic. Even being in bed, that 7.5 hours, you're going to bed earlier. So you're taking advantage of the deep sleep time, which is fantastic again. So you do what you can. If I could, you know, rewrite your entire day without all the other things that you have to do, I would allow you to ease into the day for an hour or two. Yes, but that's not always the case. And so let's not over weigh in on one marker. If we really thought this was an issue, there's another test called the stress, mood, and metabolism test. And that would look at your cortisol levels throughout the day. And it would look at your testosterone, your thyroid, and other markers. And if we saw thyroid elevated, we saw testosterone dropping, and we saw cortisol low in the morning and high at night, then yes, I would say, Brian, we have to take action on this. Yes. But this lab, I'm not going to overdo that based on this one marker.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Just, you know, I'd love to get context, not only because I feel like if I'm thinking this stuff, other people are, and it's nice to
100%
be able to connect the dots and things. So, okay, cool. So let's move.
I mean, this is putting all the pieces of the puzzle together. And if people do want to run all the labs is called the Big Five, and you get the starter kit, these two, plus the stress, mood, and metabolism test for all your hormones, which is just simple saliva test and blood spot for the thyroid, vitamin D, et cetera, food sensitivity tests. And the last one is the omega-3 to omega-6 inflammation test. So, but you know, people should just start where they're ready. And sometimes maybe that's too overwhelming, that's okay too. So then as we move to the next page, we're basically looking at your ketone markers that I want to chat about, and your vitamin levels and minerals, your vitamin levels. Okay. So we look at the folate metabolism. Yours is fantastic. So really great numbers. I'm going to actually skip to the vitamins. You've got great B12, good B5, pentothenic acid. You've got, great B2 riboflavin. You've got good CoQ10, which is great for the energy of the cells. You've got great NAC as a detoxifier and great biotin. Again, that's hair, skin, nails, as well as carbohydrate metabolism. Vitamin C is low and B6 is low. So vitamin C is needed as a great, powerful antioxidant. Again, if you're not supplementing with vitamin C and you're exercising a lot, you use the sauna, you can deplete it. It's just a powerful antioxidant that helps with oxidative stress. If you create oxidative stress, vitamin C simply helps with oxidative stress. Now, B6 is an interesting one because B6 would actually improve the markers we were just talking about, your serotonin and your calming of the sympathetic nervous system. So for you, if you're not already using the daily nutritional support or if you don't like powders, the daily activated multi, that'll have the B6. But if you're already using those, then we would add on top of that something called the activated B complex that would contain 50 milligrams of B6 to get that level up. Vitamin C is very easy to get. I mean, you can take that, typically we say away from your workout. So you can take it in the morning, or for you, you're doing your workout in the morning. We would just do it then in the evening or afternoon. And that's very simple to get anywhere from 1 gram to 2 grams a day. Not a massive amount, but just a good amount to keep up with your workouts.
Yeah, I was actually asked that because I know they usually come in milligrams. So it's 1,000 milligrams or 1 gram. For me, because it looks really low, like from these numbers. So if your low kind of range here is at 10 and I'm at 0.5. So is there a different amount I should be taking? Do you view this in a way where like I need to catch up, or do you just sort of like start where you are and do what you need to do? Like, how do you approach that?
That's a good question. Yeah, because CoQ10 you build up. So that's a good question. But vitamin C you don't. So vitamin C, like your B vitamins, are water soluble. And so what you're going to do is you're just going to get a little bit on a daily basis. So that's how we feel with most vitamins, a little bit on a daily basis rather than a mega dose. Now, there's a time and place for a large dose. Like if you have a virus or you're not feeling well, sure, you can increase that to 5-10 grams or so per day. But for everyday use, we like to keep it at 1 to 2 grams, maybe 3 grams maximum. And for you, 1 to 2 grams is right where I see you at. You're not 200 plus pounds. I don't think that we need a huge dose. You're not running Ironmans. You're getting a good workout in and you're just taking a normal amount. So, and of course, then you can retest this, right? So if you're taking vitamin C, we want to see it then on the higher side. We'll probably actually look for like 300 or 400 on the chart because we want to make sure that your body has plenty of it, knowing that it's a water soluble vitamin.
And what's the amount of B6 that you should be targeting in a day?
So for most people, 50 to 100 milligrams a day. I like to stay a little on the lower side, closer to 50 milligrams. Typically, our formulations are 25 milligrams per serving. And so if you needed two, then you would simply take two of the servings. But you have to keep in mind, multiple products are going to have B vitamins. So like in the daily nutritional support or the activated multi, about 25 milligrams. And so that might be enough for you. If you're not taking any right now, you start with that. But then if you felt like, oh, I need more, or I'm getting big benefit from this, then you can add on the activated B complex, which then adds on top of your multi. So people should know that, meaning that if you're using multiple products, there can sometimes be a sum in each product. So start to add them together.
Yeah. Is this one? So you said CoQ10 is something that accumulates over time, if I understood you correctly a minute ago.
Yes.
But these water soluble, like B6, B12, is that the same, or is it kind of like vitamin C where you just sort of start taking it and that's what you do?
That's right. So they're only going to last in your body, hours to days maximum.
Yeah. Got it. So I take no vitamins, FYI, just like terrible body maintenance. So, it seems like, first off, the fact
that you're getting most of it from food. Like that's the thing, is that's what we try to share with people. But we tell people, like, I'm sure you're eating a fantastic diet, but we tell people all the time that it is impossible if you are exercising, you're a busy individual, you have some stress in your life, to get every micronutrient. Because we're not talking about macros, not proteins, fats, and carbs. We're talking about micronutrients. It's impossible to get everything from a balanced diet. I mean, I use advanced apps that look at all the micronutrients and all the foods that people eat, even the antioxidants, and people fall short. So that's okay. So that's why I always say you don't need a lot. We have something called the daily foundational protocol. It's not mega doses of anything. And you add it on top to what you're already doing. And then you just go about your day. Like you don't have to worry about, you know, making sure that you meet your nutrient requirements, which we don't want anybody to have to scrutinize, you know, every food that they're eating.
Cool. Okay.
All right. Thanks. So the last one in this lab that I wanted to talk about, and we'll just move on to glutathione, is you had elevated levels of what's called adipic acid, sorbic acid, sebaceic acid. Typically, we see this in people, and I bet this is going to be you, who drop into hypoglycemia or low blood sugar, or do an extended fast. Again, I don't know if this is you because I don't know your diet, but this to me looks like someone that doesn't necessarily have a lot of gut-based issues, but someone that is producing more ketones because of longer intermittent fast and maybe even fasted exercise.
So this is very interesting. I was on a, I've talked about it before too, probably say like 90 to 100 days or so. I was like looking back at it, but where I was intermittent fasting every day, like 16 to 18 hours probably, or like maybe like 14 to 16 hours. And I was doing that every day. So I started like learning like what the body does at certain points. And I'm like, oh, super interesting. Like I want this to start happening inside of my body. Hafji sounds great. And so, you know, I was doing that for a period of time. I'm not sure when I did these, if I was still doing it, I might have been, but I've since then, because what I started noticing is I was actually losing muscle mass from working out every morning. I'm a very skinny person for everyone who's, you know, not watching a video right now. And so I'm working out in the morning fasted. And I actually noticed, like, I don't need to lose weight. Like a goal for me has never been weight loss. Like if I'm working out, it's actually to try to like maybe put something on. But in fasting, I wasn't giving my body like anything to put on basically. And so I started actually, now I eat breakfast every day because I feel like I need that more than not. And so, yeah, a lot of that I was happening. How long do these particular, so we're, for anybody who has run this, it's 43 to 49 on the line item in this test. How long do these sort of last, or do they change really quickly based on how you change your lifestyle?
Besides the yeast and bacteria ones, they change very quickly. Okay. Yes. So days. And so this at least is showing from the night before to that morning, you are producing more ketone-based markers, most likely, not definite, dropping into a little bit lower blood sugar. And I would completely agree with you, more of the ectomorph body type or Vata body type. You're going to lose muscle faster, and it's going to be difficult for you to put on a whole lot of weight, like meaning like that. So that's why everybody has different goals. Everybody has different body types. So what I give to you would be different from someone that was 5'8", 225 pounds, always find it challenging to keep the weight off, but they were able to always keep muscle or mass on their body, right? So for them, yeah, a little longer intermittent fast. They don't utilize glucose as well with their body. I know that doesn't make sense. We don't have time to kind of go through all of that today,
but
yeah. Their body converts it more to body fat, right? And for you, your body burns through glucose and carbohydrates and all of that quickly. So you're not someone that I would ever put on a low carb diet. You need it for both the brain and the body, and it would be more balanced. I mean, you'd be eating a good amount of protein to keep the muscle mass on the body, but you'd have balanced carbohydrates with that. That would actually be the vast preponderance of your diet. And then enough protein to keep the muscle on, build the muscle, and then a moderate amount of fat. And so when we look at this, we would want next time we ran this lab for all of those to be in the optimal range so that we weren't dropping again. Because what happens is when you go into low blood sugar, it's a stressor on the body. It is a stressor on the central nervous system. And your body then, you get signals then to your adrenal glands to work harder, to produce something called glucocorticoids. And over time, that can stress the body.
Yeah, I just want to like add something to this because this, just the frame on this. So I did this all on my own. This is what everybody does. They go out, they find something on social media, they read somebody's book, they do whatever. And they're like, yes, intermittent fasting is, it makes so much sense. I want all of these things. And over time, I just kind of started feeling like, you know what? Like, I don't know if that really is like the thing for me. And just because something technically works in a lab or we've run tests and we know that this is just foundationally how science works, doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it needs to work for a specific individual, right? It happens with us when we're in houses and how you handle things. It happens with you, with how you're treating and writing things up. And if this is what this is, which I imagine it probably is because you guessed it, and I don't know exactly when I turned it off, but it was somewhere around here, then it makes a lot of sense, right? And then if, like for me, my thought has been, if I want to get some of those benefits that come, instead of me doing it every day like I was doing it before, I might go like once a month or 2 months and say, I'm going to do a 24-hour one day or a 48-hour one day and just kind of hit it like quickly and have that happen and then come back to being able to kind of run optimally, you know, throughout the majority of my time. That's kind of where I've settled on it. But I think a lot of people do the same thing. Oh, saw this, makes so much, I'm going to do this, right? And then it might not make sense for you, you know?
That's right. Yeah. And that's the nice thing is the labs prove out what's working, what's not working, and then you can continue to tweak for your body. And I think that's important. And plus, you know, it's sometimes just the quantity. So 16 hours isn't right for me, but what does work well for my body is about 13 hours. So I stop eating around 6 o'clock at night, 5:36, and then I start eating around 7:38 in the morning. And yeah. So the perfect sweet spot for me, once I start to ramp up my day, my body needs the fuel. Some people can go a little bit longer. And so eventually you do find what works best with your body. And sometimes, honestly, it's based on where you're at in life at that moment. And that's okay too. But like you, I save longer intermittent fasts for once a week. And then, three times total a month. So not every week exact. And then once a quarter, I do a longer functional medicine detox for 7 days. And that includes a 2.5 day, almost 3 day, longer liquid-based fast. So yes, time and place for everything. And you'll start to see, just like yourself, losing muscle and eventually not as strong, not as energetic. And you're like, your body's a more catabolic state. That's not ideal. It's not a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
All right. We've got one more page here before we move on to the mold-based test. All of yours look great on this page. So I'll kind of cut right to the chase. Your glutathione levels, which helps with detoxification, looked excellent. Your methylation, which is essentially the easiest way to say it is DNA reading and writing replication for inflammation, all looks good. No high ammonia excess, which is like can be tissue breakdown or even gut-based issues. And then no excessive, I'm assuming you're not taking in any aspartame or salicylates, not a high level. And there's no excessive GI bacteria. So that's why when I look at this as well, I know we have some GI issues, imbalances, but not major. There's just not major issues here. So that's why, again, led me to that four-week. All of your amino acids look good in terms of how they're breaking down. And then your phosphoric acid, which is really a measure of vitamin D, calcium, magnesium for the bones, all of that looks excellent. So overall, this was a great lab. I mean, we talked about a bunch of things. We went in depth, but certainly beyond really looking at the blood sugar, intermittent fasting, and the first page, which was a little bit of bacterial overgrowth, overall, it was a great Candida metabolic and vitamins test. It really was. Like this was a great reading.
This is awesome. You know, it's funny is I have suspected, and again, I think this is just from like all the things you read. And like, I talked to a lot of people like you, and I've talked to all these other people like, oh yeah, you got this one symptom. You should think your gut, this, that, or the other. And like, I've just inherently thought that like, I have this like big gut problem that I need to get handled and addressed. But I've never really tested it in any like strategic way to actually understand. So it's like all this external information coming in, and I've just like created this story that isn't even necessarily true in my head on what's going on after we're looking at, you know, what you're talking about here. And that's awesome. And it makes me very happy, but it just makes me wonder who's listening to this that has done the same thing with something else in their life. And there is a reason that you need to see the actual information as opposed to this narrative that we start creating in our head. Because the thing about narratives in your head, at some point you start believing them yourself. And then you just assume that they're true without the actual validation to show that they're true. And it puts us down paths that we shouldn't be going down, right? So like if you're taking, you know, the lab reads are awesome for those who really want to get into it. I'm very thankful for it. But if you're taking like a broad scope, like takeaway from this, it's, let's not tell ourselves stories that are not necessarily true and then start believing our own hype and think that that's the case. So that's something that I'm seeing out of this particular lab here in our conversation. So I'm happy about that.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the last one that we went through was, first one was a hair sample. Second one was a urine sample. This third one's a urine sample as well. So really easy again for children and adults to do. We're looking now. So a lot of people, there's a little confusion around this one. It is our mold and mycotoxins test. But when you test for mold inside the body, you're actually looking for a waste product of mold called mycotoxins. Basically, a metabolite, a not quite a diet, but more of a waste-based product. And that shows you, based on the level of that mycotoxin, how much mold there may be exposure to in the body or in the body itself. So I think that this will be a fun one for us to go through. This is your field. Actually, I would love to have a little fun with you. All of these words are always, you know, easy to read, not easy always to pronounce. Let's go through. Let's see if we have the same pronunciation of them. Because we're mold species. It's like nobody knows the exact pronunciation, but we're looking at Fusarium. Are we on the same page for how you say that?
Yeah, I say Fusarium. Yeah.
Okay.
Some people say Fusarium.
Aspergillus? You say Aspergillus?
I say Aspergillus with a soft G.
Okay, soft G. Penicillium?
Yep, that's how I say it. Yeah.
All right. Alternaria?
Alternaria, yep, that's how I say it.
Okay. Yeah. And then Cleviceps? Or do you pronounce it Cleviceps?
I do the long A.
Okay. Yeah. So we're pretty much on the same page. It's funny because you always hear them pronounced differently, but basically those are all forms of mold-based species that we look for. And then then you look for as well. What we do then is look for the mycotoxins. So we're looking at a urine-based assay that's going through these major markers. And then we'll go over what ones, if any of yours were elevated. Okay. So we're going through aflatoxins, mm-hmm. ochratoxins. Let's see if you have a pronunciation on this one. Trichothecines. Go ahead.
I say trichothecine.
Trichothecine, even better. And then how do you pronounce the last one? I always just say Z-E-A.
Yeah, honestly, I say this one up all the time too. I say zearalenone, and I'm not totally sure if that's how you say it.
That's how I say it as well. Zearalenone. So we're looking at those, and then we've got just a couple others and other mycotoxins, which we want to talk about here today. Cetaglobsin, citrulline, anitin, gliotoxin, mycophenolic acid, and then let's see if I can get this one, stearimethoxin. I don't know if that's the pronunciation, but we always just say STC.
Yeah,
and so these are other mycotoxins. Sorry, go ahead.
So that's in the, that one's a tough one. The first one is, it's cetaglobsin for the mold cotomium. So that's the one that ties to that.
Perfect. Perfect. We appreciate that. Like your input on that. And so this test now is a little bit different in how it measures it. So basically there's a low level that we want everybody to be below. So it's basically like equal to or less than. It's very much like the first page of that Candida test that we just went through. And then anything elevated is out of range. So on your lab, all of yours looked great. They really did. I believe this was the first mycotoxin test you'd have ever taken. I'm not sure if that's true.
I did one with the same lab, and I just pulled it up right now. And
I'd love to hear if you have previous results.
Yeah, I'm trying to see the date on this. 2019. So I have one from 2019 that I did as well. So I'd love to kind of compare these back and forth and kind of see. So. Anyways, go ahead.
So I don't have your first results, but on this one, and this is important context, the ochratoxin A, OTA, should be 7.5 or less. Mm-hmm. Yours is 9.94. So it's in the red, it's elevated, but when we create, so we're basically creating our own what's called structured data and summary on these to make it easier for people. I would have a line that's actually graded, has a gradient. Okay. Because as we look at this, up to 10, up to 15 would be a green fade, meaning like it's not optimal, but it's not ideal. So you are still below that. So you're elevated, but since it's in the red, it makes it look as bad as if it was 100 or 150, when really, you know, you're like 3 points maximum out of range. Let's say about 2.5 points. So I'm not as worried about that ochratoxin A. Of course, I want to still work on it, and we will. But it's not, I always tell people, this is not as one to be worried about. Now, your citrulline is one that is elevated, and that one is basically double the elevation we want to see it at. So double the max elevation. And when we look at that one, although not as egregious as that ochratoxin A, where can it be found? It can be found in dry goods, we call it. So basically like grains and cereals and things that might be affected with this specific mold. Because if people are not aware, and I'm sure we talked about this on the show and other places, but let's say that any of those nuts or seeds or beans or oats or anything has just a little dampness in it. And then they seal the bag, you can actually get some of that mold or those mold spores. And the mold spores could even be in the manufacturer that are in that package or begin to grow at a microscopic level. Nothing that you would typically ever see or taste, but that is a real possibility. It's also found in things like wine and other products, sometimes even olive oil. So it's important to know that there can be exposure to those. And then, of course, for the citronin, or citronine, you'd want to look at the same thing, mold from water damaged, typically walls, sheetrock, vents, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
How does that compare to your previous ones? Because I'd love to see if it's better, about the same, what that looked like from before.
Yeah. So ochratoxin is almost exactly the same. So again, I ran this, it's just 2024 right now. I ran this like 4.5 years ago, this last one.
Yeah.
I was 9.11. We're 9.94 here on ochratoxin. So that is pretty much the same. By the way, when I ran this before, I got the same sort of explanation from my functional doc that I was working with on like, yeah, it's elevated. But at the time when I did this other one, for some context, I was in houses every single day at this time.
Oh, wow.
Doing inspections.
Yeah.
So now, obviously, we've, you know, kind of established the company, and I'm not going into every house. I go every now and then, and then I help support on all the other things. So like my exposure personally has gone down a lot for my day-to-day from environment as opposed to what it was. Now, previously, my citronin was at 14. So now we're like 51. So there's a big swing there. The other big swing that happened here is before, my mycophenolic acid was 160. And now it's like not even showing up, which is kind of interesting too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where it's at. I mean, so I, you know, from what I have now in here, right? So we're seeing citronin. So just to kind of recap that piece of it, do you see, maybe it's just a general about all the molds, like we could talk about, or the mycotoxins. Do you feel that food, environment, is one more prevalent than the other? Is it tied to the specific toxin that you see where that comes from? I'm just curious to get your input on that.
Yeah, definitely tied to specific toxin. Some are almost all water-based damage. Like realistically, sure, you could get some from these, but it's really from water-based damage. Now, I will tell you, this is important that we bring this up and that we have this, you know, chat about the ochratoxin A. Because if you are just consistently a 9, well, it's like everyone, we almost never see our minerals and metals test where anyone's aluminum is a 0. But we see all the other metals at basically a 0. But aluminum, almost never. Why? It's so pervasive in the environment. Same with this mycotoxin, ochratoxin A. So it's like, I've never seen anybody come back with basically 0. It's just, and you can, you know, share your knowledge and experience on this. If you're living in an area where there's just more mold, like environmental as well, not even just in the home, I think we have a level of exposure that is part of nature. And so like, we're going to have maybe some level of exposure. But the one, the citronin, and I don't want to jump off the thought too quickly there, but it can come from foods. It really can. So the way that we store grains, anything that's been like fermented or that can ferment or that is stored that can last for a long time, like beer and cheese and wine and you know, anything like that, even cured meats like beef jerky, things like that can all have this as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, for where I am now, right? If there's one thing that I feel confident is that I don't have a major mold issue in my house. So I know that the environmental component of this specifically, like, yeah, there's one or two things that I know that there's something going on. Honestly, I haven't even tested them because my solution, if you think about it, it's like, all right, I know that there, I'm seeing cues of water damage in maybe two spots. I don't own the house. Not really going to be able to fix it if there's an issue. And frankly, every place that you walk into to only see one or two things that you're in is like, it's like, how did I find this place basically? Right.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, for my situation, like, yes, there's a couple little things, but in the grand scheme of things, I have a good sense of like what's good and not good at this, that, or the other. So I kind of settle on that. So is it possible that there are some Aspergillus or Penicillium species that happen to be in like one of these places in my space that I might be getting close to? Like, I suppose that's possible. But I'm also doing a lot of, you know, I'm doing sauna, I'm doing a lot of detox too. So like, how does that counteract, you know, what's going on?
Well, it very well may be. Yeah, it's very possible that your numbers would be higher if you weren't doing your exercise and your sauna and eating well, all of these things in life. That's why we do them. You know, I wrote the de-stress protocol, diet, exercise, stress reduction, toxin removal, rest, emotional balance, scientifically backed supplements, and success mindset. It's like, you don't do one, you do all. You don't have to go all out in any one. And it helps balance then the things we are exposed to, because we can't live a super pristine life where we're never exposed to anything. So the goal is to really make the body strong, to get the rest it needs, then allow the body to heal and do what it needs. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean we can't give it a little bit of help, right? We can't. We can do a heavy metal detox. We can help with the gut. We can help with these things, because that's also giving our body back some of its strength. So it doesn't have to use all of its own. So that's how I look at it. I think it's, you know, super important. I know for myself, growing up in New England, in the fall and late spring, my allergies to mold were awful. And my house didn't necessarily get worse, but all the dead leaves in the fall and then the snow melting them and causing, you know, mold on the grass and the leaves as well, it really taxed my immune system and overflowed that rain barrel, for lack of a, you know, different terminology. But sure. It was brutal. I mean, it really was. Now, it lasted for a month in like late October and really bad in April. And then after that, it was better. And so like, was I better? No, but like I wasn't exposed to a large amount that I was, you know, during those couple of months. But that's what we try to share, because if you were to lower your overall mold level, improve your immune system, when now, so again, I'm the same human with the same genetics, when October comes around, or especially the month of April, which they were the worst, when pollen's out, all those things, I'm not saying that my body is not still susceptible, but I don't have any symptoms. Mm-hmm. And that's because everything else is much more balanced. That's what we try to help people with. Not become perfect, but much better balanced humans.
Yeah, I preach the same thing with everyone I talk to as well. So let's talk about, so we have this mycotoxin result. We have our ochratoxin A that's sort of there, but not terrible.
And if that was the only thing, I would do nothing with that, just to let you know, Brian. Like I would not do anything with that small marker right there, because that is most likely some type of ongoing exposure that I could put you on a mold protocol, but it's like aluminum. Like it's there. We don't want that to start to get elevated. If it's elevated, it's an issue, but it's really not an issue where it is right now. But the citrinin, I would start to look at, okay, are there any foods that could be exposed to? Like that's where I would go first, like the beef jerky, the dried meats, the bit, like I would look at those things and say, that's most likely the culprit. I'd begin to eliminate those, but I would most likely, after the 4-week modified CBO protocol we put you on, I would move to the mold protocol just to zap out that last amount that is there and could be, which I know for you, previous exposure as well. You had this already elevated, right? On your previous one, citrinin?
This one was elevated, not as high, but it was elevated before, yeah.
Yeah. So I'd want to see if it's like an ongoing, like, have you eaten the same type of thing, same company for 5 years? Because that's always possible. I mean, it really is. Or, you know, has this been in your body and now we need to get rid of it, just like the mercury?
Yeah. I just want to revisit the food piece, because I think for me, that's probably a big piece of this. So you said dry goods, wine, olive oil, cheese, cured meats, anything that's stored for periods of time.
And I would say it's more, I did say olive oil, but usually it's more olives. Like think about the things that you can keep in your refrigerator forever. They just kind of sit there, right? It's like you can have like a jar of capers, a jar of olives, pickles. Those things can get moldy over time and they sit there and they can just ferment and they can get mold. So that's it. That's a big part of it. You're, you know, even like, oh, I know they're lower pH, so they're not supposed to get mold, but over time they can when exposed to air, like the jams and the jellies, like just think of anything that typically sits there for a while. And then on top of that, the aged food. So aged cheese, cured meats, and then wine and beer, which are all fermented as well.
Is there a different aged cheese and other types of cheese specifically?
Yes, there is. So like you can get a fresh goat cheese, a fresh mozzarella. Those are going to be your softer cheeses typically. And then your harder cheeses, they're not all hard, are the ones that are aged. So anything that's higher in histamines could also be potentially a little higher in mold.
Got it.
Not always, but they correlate quite a bit. So anything what's called aged, fermented, or smoked.
Got it. The fermented thing is interesting because, again, you see on Reels, Tears, that, and the other places of, yeah, eating sauerkraut, this, fermented that, it's good for your gut. It's good for your gut, right? And it's like, okay.
That's true. Yeah. That, they have good probiotics. However, if you have overgrowth, not so good. If you have a high histamines, right, not so good. And then if you have mold, well, not so good. Now, if you have low gut bacteria, yeah, positive. So it's always like, who are we recommending this to? And in the social media world, it's an all for one. Like sauerkraut's good for everyone. Well, not necessarily good for everyone.
Cool. Well, I think this is all helpful. So my key takeaways out of this are the few, the process that you talked about, which would be that 1 month CBO protocol, the mastic gum, which would be a specific target for H. pylori, then moving to the mold protocol to help address the elevated mycotoxin issue on that piece, vitamin supplementation in these areas where I'm low, and figuring out how to sort of get some more relaxation, downtime, switch into that parasympathetic mode more often. Is that kind of my takeaway out of this?
Yes, as well as balanced zinc you'll take at dinner, just one capsule, and then magnesium that you typically take at dinner or after dinner as well. And that will help really push the body more out of fight or flight and more into with the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and relax. So that's the main takeaway from the plan, without a doubt.
Did you say magnesium or potassium at dinner? Sorry.
Magnesium.
Magnesium at dinner.
Yeah, we typically never supplement with potassium. Not a problem. You can get it in certain things, but it's really easy to get in most fruits and vegetables. And by squeezing a lemon or lime in your water, you get some good potassium there. So that is how most people, like we have in our practice, get their potassium. The magnesium, though, most people are deficient in from a functional perspective. And that is nice to take at dinner because it really then calms the nervous system.
And the balanced zinc was the one that had copper with zinc in it. Is that
exactly
my memory?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes, correct.
Awesome. Well, this sounds pretty doable and not terrible.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you ran a good amount of labs too. And so, you know, this is a in-depth plan. And what we do is based on the person, based on their comfort level, you might say, oh, you know, I don't want to start with all of it. Can I start with this? Yes, here we go. We're going to start with this. And then we kind of build it out from there. So even for you, you know, we're going to go 4 week modified CBO with the mastic gum. Then after that, we'll move into the mold. Okay. And then after that, there's no rush. We can then do the heavy metal detox. And then that'll enable you not to be overwhelmed with supplementation or even protocols. But keep in mind, these are pretty easy to do. You know, we give you there, you can get a little supplement box and just put them in that. And you just do your upon waking, your breakfast, your dinner before bed, and you're done. So it's just, you know, takes seconds to just kind of, you can pre-bag them, you can do it however you want. And it's easy to do. And you let the herbs, the enzymes, et cetera, go to work. And then you, again, we want you to continue. People have a busy enough life to continue as on their day. But I do always want to recommend that it's not just about supplementation. You're already eating the right food, so we don't have to change that, you know, dramatically. We talked a little bit about intermittent fasting, but it is also about the whole de-stress protocol. It's about your exercise. You're doing that. You're doing the sauna, which is great. You have to look at the sleep. You want to look at downtime. And all of those things matter in the end. It's not just one thing. It's essentially eight parts that we speak on. And that really leads to a much more balanced, healthy life.
No, this is awesome. So with someone who's working with, you know, with your coaching team as they're going through this, so you have this conversation, I'm sure it's probably not as long as ours was, but it's probably in depth still. So what comes out of this? Is it something where then like something gets sent and like, here's your sort of like custom pack of things that you get? Is it some sort of like when you leave your regular doctor you go to, you get some sort of like summary, right? Like how does that process work with you guys?
Yeah. So we send you the labs themselves. You actually, it's in a private HIPAA compliant app. So it's completely private. It doesn't get sent to anybody, your insurance or anybody. It's just private. And then that comes with a summary of your results. So you'll, of course, be speaking with the health coach, but sometimes you want the summary there too. Has the graphics. It's very easy to read of your results. And then at the bottom is your personal recommendations. And then what we typically do is, so EquiLife is our website, equi.life. You can purchase protocols there. You can get anything you need. Or if you don't want to, that's okay. You can always look at what we use and decide to go with another company. That's okay as well. And so all of that is sent by links. And then you're the one who decides, basically, if you want to use all of it, great. You're starting the full protocol. Or you want to purchase some now and then begin the protocol in another, like you might start, okay, modified CBO now, plus massive gum, plus these vitamins, not going to order the mold protocol until after 4 weeks. Great. Then you get that. And not going to order the heavy metal detox until after another 8 weeks for the mold protocol. So people are welcome to get started how they want. We like people to stay consistent. That's how you get results. Don't have to be perfect every single day. But ideally 90% of the time you're on track and you'll get great results.
This has been awesome. I'm excited for that email to come so I can start clicking links and getting things. I will say that I've always wanted a very custom version of what I need to be doing for myself. And, you know, throughout my time, like I've spoken with a lot of people. It's like, you should do this, you should do that. And I always felt, I'm like, yeah, I get it. Like, this is how you do this, is how you do that. This type of experience is, you know, what we strive for to do with our clients too, but like to be on the other side of it, to be like, oh, this is for you, the way that you go and attack this. And then here's your next steps. This is awesome. And like, frankly, like I think I've known that I've wanted and needed to do this, but now that it's come, it's like, man, I have needed to do this for a long time. And like, I ran that mycotoxin test in 2019. Like I was thinking about it way back then, right? Like that's when I started doing this stuff. And so I'm very excited for all of this stuff to come through. Very grateful for you, the man himself, to come here and do the walkthrough with me. So I appreciate that. We'll be updating in the next the version or the episode 3 of this 4-parter, kind of how things are progressing and how all that goes.
Fantastic. I appreciate you having me on and getting to chat with your community. It's always a good time. So thank you.
Awesome. All right. Have a good one.
You too.
So that's it for today's show, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe and give a rating wherever you get your podcasts. It'll help spread the word to those who really need it the most.